And we're back. Hug your closest canine friend. Welcome to another edition of Mike, Mike, and Oscar. I am your host, Mike One. This is host also Mike.
I am also Mike. I am also a dog person.
Yes, we're two dog people here talking about a dog movie. We're in our element. We're in our primes. We are talking about, finally, the much anticipated, awaited, and adored Isle of Dogs Oscar sprint profile, the Wes Anderson animated classic that came out many months ago.
Rewind button, though, because you said we are in our element. We're also in our primes, did you say?
I don't know.
We are in our element. We are in the prime of our lives.
Both our athletic and sexual prowess. Yes.
Well, okay, yes. True.
We're doing.
I'm so glad you noticed.
Now, you just got a new dog recently.
New dog, yes. If pods a couple months ago were sad, it's because my old dog died.
Yes.
Now, we're happy and tired because the puppy is driving me fucking nuts. But
now, do you think
girl.
Your dog was saved from a trash island during a Japanese conspiracy?
In my darkest dreams, she goes around the block and gets lost. So absolutely not.
She wasn't capable of saving a young boy and bringing him to freedom. But yes, we were talking about Isle of Dogs as it recently went to video on demand for purchase. I know I have Xfinity, and that's kind of where I saw this once. I had to rent it. But we wanted to do this when it first came out. It just kept getting bumped. It was our Matt Damon equivalent for the Jimmy Kimmel Show.
Yeah, you said we should just keep bumping this.
I wanted to. I really just wanted to just never get to it.
Just keep bumping it for the next 8 months.
I thought it would have been funny. Like, we review it the day after the Oscars.
It's so stupid. But it would have been funny to you.
Right, and that's
that
what I care
something.
About.
That means something. It means I want you to be happy too. But
as long as I'm satisfied, that's no. Mike is going to start, as we always do, with a production profile, takedown, cast and crew, all that fun stuff.
Co-written and directed by Wes Anderson, whose filmography includes Fantastic Mr. Fox, Grand Budapest Hotel, Moonrise Kingdom, Darjeeling Limited, Life Aquatic, Royal Tenenbaums, Rushmore, and Bottle Rocket.
Good job.
Mike, what's your favorite of those movies of the Wes Anderson?
I'm a big fan of Moonrise Kingdom. It was so awkwardly delightful. I really loved it.
Yeah, I have a hard time with this question because, you know, I basically asked you what you dreamed about last night so I could tell you what I dreamed
exactly.
about last
yes,
night.
Exactly, yes. That's why I answered quickly.
Grand Budapest Hotel or Royal Tenenbaums are probably my two favorites.
Answering a question you just said, wah, 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 wah.
The other writers are the usual Wes Anderson think tank of friends, Hollywood friends. Jason Schwartzman, who I just realized was the son of Talia Shire, Adrian from Rocky.
Yes.
I never knew that.
You didn't know that?
Freaking me out. Mozart in the Jungle, writer, producer, director, and son of Francis Ford Coppola. The connection, because Talia Shire is his sister. Roman Coppola, Jason Schwartzman, Roman Coppola, childhood.
Now, see, that's where I got lost, because I didn't know there was a Roman Coppola.
So Roman Coppola, Jason Schwartzman, an actor.
Say Jason Schwartzman's name again.
Schwartzman. Actor in the Sofia Coppola movies, turned writer slash friend of this whole group, Konichi Nomura. So he was in Lost in Translation. He becomes buddies with Roman Coppola, the cousin buddies there. My God. The actors voicing characters in this movie.
What a loaded, loaded cast.
Bryan Cranston, Ed Norton, Bob Balaban, Bill Murray, Jeff Goldblum, Greta Gerwig, Frances McDormand, Scarlett Johansson, Harvey Keitel, Yoko Ono, F. Murray Abrahams, Tilda Swinton, Ken Watanabe, Liev Schreiber, Angelica Houston, Fisher Stevens, Akira Ito, Akira Takayama, with the narrator being Courtney B. Vance, and the child Atari voiced by Koyu Rankin.
Okay.
Oh my God.
How does Bob Balaban get in that list? I love Bob Balaban. I know he's got connections all throughout
Hollywood.
He's
at the diner where these guys come up with the movie.
But he's just so...
And the story.
I love Bob Balaban. I love his work, especially on Seinfeld. I think that's what he's going to forever be known for in my heart. But Bill Murray, F. Murray Abraham, Ed Norton.
Bob Balaban's also done it for Christopher Guest, throughout Christopher Guest's career. So he's like that.
The unsuspecting guest.
Yeah, the unassuming
citizen.
Guy who's working a lot of good points into the pre-production experience Christopher Guest, for Wes Anderson.
Can
for
never
a lot
forgive
of
him for well, that 2001 movie.
He came up with Gosford Park.
Yeah.
He was behind that 2001 Best Director.
This is why I'm giving him a backhanded compliment right now, because I can never forgive him for that movie and making me sit through it.
So this is an adaptation, actually, of a manga comic written by Minetaro Mochizuki.
And again, a lot of Asian names in this, and we're doing our best to pronounce them, and our apologies if we mishandle any.
Otherwise, Wes Anderson was heavily influenced by the Christmas specials from Rankin and Bass Productions. Those include Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer with Burt Ives and Santa Claus Is Coming to Town with Fred Astaire. So as a child, he loves those things. Sure. Now, my thesis question for this entire episode is, I'm just thinking like a suit. Who is this movie for? Is it only for adults who love to take trips down memory lane into their childhoods and watch an animated movie? Because it's fairly sophisticated. It's a convoluted plot, but there's
I can tell you exactly
we're gonna
get
it.
Yeah, this movie is for
hipsters only.
No, it's for every person that's ever said, oh, "I would have rather they killed that person instead of that dog." They killed that dog in that movie. It hurt, killed me. That's who this
body
movie is
count
for
people is higher. Again, a question and a theme not exactly geared towards children.
No, this is not a kid. Well, it's PG-13. It's not exactly a kid's movie. Right. It's not marketed as such. Just has bright colors and beautiful dogs.
In October 2015, Anderson announced he was going back to stop-motion animation for a film about dogs with Ed Norton, Bryan Cranston, and Bob Balaban already attached. Balaban right from the get-go, man.
Good, get yours, Bob Balaban. Keep getting them checks.
And to further prove my point, Anderson says the films of Akira Kurosawa are like at the center of this pre-production process.
Could you imagine if he went full Kurosawa for this movie?
It's just Ran. It's just dogs. It's just reenacting
seven
King
dogs
Lear.
Fighting an army, which is basically what it was, actually. So,
with swords in the air and flags just running through the high grass. I'd be fascinating. That was a rough movie. That was actually a halfway decent movie, though. Anyway, production began in October.
Did you just call Ran by Akira Kurosawa a halfway decent movie?
Halfway decent movie is fucking 3 hours long.
Right, but okay.
And most of it is just a group of 12 guys running through grass with flags and swords in the air.
Fine.
It's also, I think, King Lear. I don't remember which Shakespeare play it is.
It's a different different conversation for a different
time. We are Oscar critics somehow. Fooling ourselves. Production began in October 2016 after a few years of writing. Fox Searchlight acquired the worldwide distribution rights. The film premiered, as you will say, 68th Berlin Film Festival this past February. The movie was given a platform release, meaning only a few theaters to start, expanding weekly to a wide release this past April 13th. After the release of this movie, kind of the centerpiece to this production profile, there was an argument among Asian American film critics over whether the film appropriately portrayed Japanese culture.
Hmm.
Justin Chang of the Los Angeles Times wrote, quote, "It's in the director's handling of the story's human factor that his sensitivity falters, and the weaknesses for racial stereotyping that has sometimes marred his work comes to the fore."
Interesting.
Later adding, again, quote, "Much of the Japanese dialogue has been pared down to simple statements that non-speakers can figure out based on context and facial expressions."
So, obviously, neither you or I have any Asian heritage to us. This isn't really something that we can relate to. So we certainly don't know Japanese.
Correct. It's a fascinating criticism because, yes, there are no subtitles in this movie, right. And he does that on purpose. He did not want to do that. There's translators,
right.
But there's none of that, and you have to figure out what the heck they're saying if you don't speak Japanese based on the contextual clues. Now, he's saying that is insensitive.
Right.
Emily Yoshida of The Vulture.
Who I love, by the way. She's a big player in the Nerdist world and all that.
Of Vulture, not The Vulture. Interviewed.
Not the one
of
bird.
The Michael Keaton guy. No. Emily Yoshida interviewed several Japanese speakers on their perceptions of the film when this movie came out. These reviews went from mixed to positive, with one interview in particular saying the film was a respectful portrayal of Japanese culture.
You got both sides of the coin there, it sounds like. Again, we're pretty far removed from it that I don't know that we can pass comment or if it would matter.
I wanted to bring it to this production profile. I thought it would deserve
it is, yeah,
to be
certainly,
talked
certainly
about.
Deserves a spotlight and deserves to be highlighted. Asian culture a lot of times kind of goes overlooked, especially as far as being racially insensitive to the culture.
Sure.
I don't feel like there's as much of an outrage when an Asian kind of gets accidentally mocked or politically incorrectly mocked as opposed to
think about
somebody
it
black or,
of,
you know, just
Hollywood
point
portrayals, fucking Mad TV back in the day. Anyway.
Exactly.
Back to some more movie info. Our best original score Oscar winner, Alexandre Desplat, is scoring this movie.
I still can never forgive him for last year.
He won for Shape of Water.
Wrongfully.
He'd previously worked with Anderson on the Grand Budapest Hotel, Fantastic Mr. Fox.
And you love this. You like this score. You really like this score, you said.
I really liked it. I really like it many times. I've seen this movie 5 times now.
Just waiting for us to do this episode.
Well, you've been stringing me along, Michael. You're like, oh, yeah, let's do it next week. Put it on the schedule.
Listen.
And then I watch it again.
Honestly, the only reason we're doing this now is because I didn't have another episode to slide in instead.
You didn't have another
I didn't have a backup. Yet.
Ready when I asked you, finally. Oh, and I did have to break your balls.
I know.
To watch it last
I hated
night.
It. Really wanted to just string this out.
The movie also features songs, fittingly enough, from Kurosawa films Seven Samurai and Drunken Angel.
So really wanted to get that Kurosawa aesthetic in. And yeah. This, I made the joke, it's seven dogs fighting an army. Basically, if you think about it, at some point in this movie, it's kind of seven dogs fighting an army.
fighting a Western villager.
So, yeah. All right, cool.
Seven Samurai is also the, for the Magnificent Seven, it's the same story.
Right, yes, very good. Thank you.
I just want to throw that out there.
I appreciate it.
I paid attention to a few things at film school.
Or just basic education with your school system.
Or I, you know, just, you know, surf the internet once or twice.
Can we keep going on this tangent? I think we can string this out
you
for a couple minutes.
You have specs.
Thank you. I Love Dog Specs. Direct and screenplay written by Wes Anderson, as also Mike told you. Also, Roman Coppola, Jason Schwartzman, Kunichi Nomura, all with story credits. Debuted February 15th, 2018 at the Berlin International Film Festival and went wide in the U.S. on March 23rd of this year. 99-minute runtime on a PG-13 rating. Produced by Studio Babelsberg, Indian Paintbrush, and American Empirical Pictures, with the distribution rights going to Fox Searchlight. Still no listed budget, but it does have a box office rake worldwide of $63.9 million, so approaching that $64 million mark. Basically a 50-50 split, down to like a couple thousand dollar difference.
There are as many hipsters here as they are, internationally. Are in the rest of the world.
Very odd. So not often we see a 50-50 split like down to the dollar like that, but this one has it, at least as it stands today of this recording. It sounds pretty substantial, $64 million, but I was surprised to learn that it's only the 10th highest box office for a stop-motion animation movie. Kind of surprised by that. You don't think, I mean, stop-motion, you think like, okay, Nightmare on Elm Street, Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Nightmare on Elm Street?
Oh, I'm sorry, Nightmare, Jesus Christ. Sorry, Freddy.
Nightmare, I would pay to see that
Nightmare Before
though.
Christmas.
Hell yeah.
Nightmare Before Christmas. Fantastic Mr. Fox, thank you for correcting me. Number one, actually, is Chicken Run.
Really?
Yeah. $106 million. I don't know if it was domestic or worldwide, but that's the box office
rating.
Regardless, critical acclaim is high for Isle of Dogs. 8.0 IMDb rating on 60,000 plus reviews.
That is high.
Carries an 89% certified fresh Rotten Tomato rating on 273 critical reviews, 244 of those being positive, so that's less than 30 negative. Average rating from critics of 8 out of 10. Audience score of 88% on 8,700 reviews. Average audience rating of 4.2 out of 5. And it carries an 82 Metascore, which is, again, incredibly high. Anything above 80 for a Metascore is really doing work. 82 Metascore, 2 points above BlacKkKlansman. It's tied with A Quiet Place. And it's tied with Mandy.
Really?
The Nicolas Cage
the niche
Devil in the
movie.
Advocate movie we did.
The niche horror
episode.
Movie trailer
yeah,
review.
It's tied with Mandy. Get in the Oscars conversation, Mandy. Highly rated and well-received as well with regards to awards thus far. It won a Silver Berlin Bear Award for Wes Anderson as the Best Director at the Berlin International Film Festival. The Audience Award winner among headliners at South by Southwest.
Wow.
Winner of Best Film Audience Award at the Titanic International Film Festival, which we had to look out, but is apparently a 25-year-long running film festival in Budapest, which we didn't know about, and now we do. Those are the specs. So again,
we were analyzing the derivation of their name.
Yes.
They called it the Titanic Film Festival 4 years before Titanic.
The Leo movie. So you think that they didn't reference the ship when they were coming up with the name then, right? They just mean like Titanic as in a huge film festival.
It's like they backed into an amazingly successful brand there.
Like the 4 years prior to the James Cameron movie, their mascot was just something huge. And then that happened and they're like, oh, now it's a ship. That's what we meant it to be.
Well, yeah, of course. We jumped in front of that train,
saw this
baby.
Coming. Okay, Isle of Dogs. You want to start with a production value? You want to do some expectations? How do you want to handle this?
Yeah, so some expectations for you was obviously just dread and fear an annoyance.
Annoyance is number one. You pulled my leg pretty hard last night. You're like, just watch this goddamn movie. Like, let's get this done. And the irony of this is, when I first saw the preview for Isle of Dogs last year, I was super hyped about it. And I still was. I wanted to see it. Right. I just, the joke of causing you aggravation pleased me more than the
this
wanting to see
this
movie. This
man is a meta-joke connoisseur. Like, he deserves to be in a David Fincher movie played by Anthony Hopkins because he loves meta jokes and the wielding of them so
now,
much.
The expectation of the actual movie. I said when it first came out, I thought it would contend for Best Picture just because it was Wes Anderson and it's such a loaded cast and it was so unique. I think obviously we're going to see that is a little misguided. I don't think it's that high of a claim. In that regard, going in with kind of that mindset, I think I was a little let down.
Watching the fantastic Mr. Fox before seeing this movie, I kind of feel the same way. So that's where I was at.
Right.
I thought Fantastic Mr. Fox had a great script to it.
And sure.
This script is just a little hokey. It's just a little goofy.
It takes an acid trip.
Yeah.
A little bit, yeah.
And
sure.
That's fine in many ways. I just think, like, this movie is torn between who is it going for? What audience? Like, you have a silly child. I don't know. I'm calling children silly now, but you have a silly script at many, many ways, which you think would be geared towards a kid's movie, and yet you have a lot of heavy subject matter, political machinations at the
also
for one arc of a through line or one of the arcs of the movie.
Yeah, and we'll talk about it, but the conflict is resolved at the end of the second act, pretty much.
I'm with you there. We'll talk about that. Yes, so very strange in terms of narrative structure.
But again, it's Wes Anderson, so probably intentional.
I will say, the second viewing had some diminishing returns for me.
Interesting.
Now, I wrote this down a while ago.
Now, the second viewing was back in 82?
Yeah. I just watched it again.
Okay.
And I enjoyed myself. It's perfectly fine to rent this on VOD and watch it. Now, I just wonder if we talked about a lot of numbers in your specs. I wonder if the audience of Incredibles 2 were to rate this movie. This is meant for a bunch of hipster douchebags like ourselves. This is not meant for mass consumption, correct?
I don't know. I don't know how to answer that. Because if you look, how appealing is a cast with the universally likable Bill Murray,
right,
the universally likable Bryan Cranston, the universally in everything Bob Balaban? You know, Wes Anderson is a niche kind of taste, I would say.
Yes.
But I feel like it's almost as if he was like, let me win the best animated feature Oscar.
Yeah. I just think, feel like this is him making a movie for adults based on nostalgic love for the stop motion films and manga comics.
Yeah. So it's like it's his love letter to Kurosawa and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Sure.
He's not making a doggy movie for your little niece.
It's not a... What was
you
that?
Would not show her this because this is the end of Toy Story 3 for the first hour and a half. You're talking about doggy suicide.
That's a good point.
These dogs are in peril.
A really good analogy.
Horrifying peril. And the major B story that turns into the A story is about a politician speaking to his populace.
Right.
And we have... Yeah, it doesn't make sense that this is not a doggy movie for kids.
Do you think there was a hidden message? You think there was some subtext in this one? Let's talk about production values. It's gorgeous.
This is a feast for the eyes, right?
It's gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. I have no idea. The patience that it must go into to doing these stop motion things is something I don't have and have never had. But I commend the work on this.
Like, would you go to a museum?
No. Is that it? Is that the end?
If there's an Isle of Dogs production house.
Yeah, of course.
For the rest of time, like Nightmare Before Christmas, if they had all of this in one house, and would you go and pay, would you pay $10 walk through those sets?
I mean, of course I would, but does it hurt the movie or help the movie in the fact that something like this, you naturally have to think of what it must have gone into making it.
Right.
And almost the production story, is it more interesting than the movie itself? I don't know. Does it help or hurt the movie that you're thinking so much about the production of it throughout the watching of it?
But every shot is a work of art. Every setting is amazing. The way he works in this entire world, I mean, it's like a epic fantasy movie. It's a freaking Middle Earth level of complexity, but it's also there's clarity to it. You know, Isle of Dogs is a real place. They could have used a real place. They didn't.
Right.
But it's very cool how they have so many layers and so many different levels of this setting.
And the cinematography is pretty outstanding. The camera work he did with stop motion things.
Yeah, I didn't love the pan. The pans were kind of disorienting in the very beginning of the movie, like the first few shots. Even still, watching it five times, I it still makes me almost dizzy because it's like too much color. I almost had a seizure during
It's a lot of input.
It's a lot of color and it's a lot of detail at the same time. So when they pan so fast, maybe the pan was just too fast for my eyes.
Now, there were other times where the camera kind of was telling jokes, I noticed. And I thought, I really appreciated that. I thought it was kind of innovative that, especially when there's a moment where the dog named Chief reveals that he was a stray, but he wasn't always a stray. And the camera is kind of like panning off him. And then he says he wasn't a stray and it whips back to him. It's just like, it was kind of funny in that the way they used it.
I love the close-ups when they do close-ups and when they give you the wide shot.
Imagine getting a close up of a stop motion animated dog and you have to move its fucking lips little by little.
The wetness they give to the eyes when the characters have watery eyes. Does that break your heart?
Beautiful.
Or what?
It's so gorgeous. Yes. Heartbreak. Yes. Yeah. So the sight of this is really something to behold. Sound, you loved the sound, the score of this.
I really like the score, and I think it's showcased with the Japanese drums. It's culturally unique. I think it's a celebration. Definitely. It's a celebration for that culture. I don't think he's just being a tourist there. I think, you know, I mean, but it's fun for us to be tourists here, is what I want to say.
Yeah, and, I would agree with that.
I do enjoy I was a percussionist in middle school.
Were you?
And
did you hold the cymbals or would you bang drums?
Drums.
Okay.
And I did cymbals and timpanis. It was either that or get up in front of people and sing. So we all know I can't do that.
You were like the Travis Barker.
It was one or the other. Well, our band, I should have said this at 8th grade.
It would have been a good time for it.
Yeah. I meant to say it.
How did you get there now?
Because I wrote it down for 8th grade. I never said it. And now I'm saying it for Isle of Dogs.
All right.
But we actually played at Shea Stadium, so we were not a bad middle school band.
There's all kinds of fodder here. How was your band teacher? Did he have a rat tail? God damn it. And now it's just a one-liner in the wind.
One-liner thrown to the wind. I was not as good of a drummer as these kids in the Japanese stop-motion
claymation band. More
on point,
yes.
I
would agree. It does kind of bring you into the culture, what I would assume is very appropriate.
But you have the dog whistle incorporated in the score.
Yeah.
Wow, I really can't whistle. No wonder I was not in the choir. The pipes don't exactly work well. Sorry, that's my whistling.
The soundtrack had a couple older songs. I downloaded one of the songs that was used from a band. I thought it was a current song.
Right.
It's a band I'd never heard of out of like 1967.
Yeah.
Which I was
fascinated. Is that the West Coast pop art experimental band?
Yes. I'd never heard of
them. I Won't Hurt You. Yeah, I love that song.
Me too.
I
used
that
a couple
was
times.
So epic.
Yeah.
So epic when they're just walking through the setting.
Mm-hmm.
This Isle of Dogs, man. That was so cool. And I think Alexandre Desplat might get a little credit coming out of the Oscar win here.
I don't. You made the point that you had it above. I was so emotionally attached to 8th grade and what it kind of sounds like you are to this score. So it's going to be interesting. You had this obviously above 8th grade. We having just recorded 8th grade is why it's so fresh in our mind. But
you're remarkable to me. You're a remarkable person because you can see a movie once and fully take in immerse yourself in the entire experience with the score. I am so hyper, just hyper, that I go to a movie and I can't remember the score at all. Like this movie come out of it, I remember the drum sequence.
Right.
Because the visuals, they showed me something, you just didn't, you know, let me hear it. I've seen this movie 5 times now, and that's how many times it's taken me to appreciate the score.
Well, I'll take the compliment, but it's also the first time I've ever been complimented in my life. No. I'm more musically inclined with a lot of stuff I listen to, especially percussionists, so the drums really took me over, but I don't know why. I guess it's really a credit to the score of these movies that they were so impactful and noticeable to me.
I mean, right now, it's like a top 5 of the year for me. I wouldn't argue. We'll wind up. Do you want to jump ahead and do that Oscar lens right here now?
Yeah, let's get into it. I mean, animated feature, this is a lot to be nominated, right?
Based on the critical numbers, based on everybody's rankings, yeah, I think it winds up there. The way it looks, I think it should be there. My question is, like, Incredibles 2, I have much higher than this. what's going to be the landscape? I know there's going to be a Studio Ghibli movie. There's going to be Ralph Breaks the Internet, if that's awesome.
Well, we've been on record saying we think those are the big three. Studio right. Ghibli aside, it's Ralph, Incredibles 2, this.
The other big one was The Grinch.
That's coming out. Spider-Man as well.
Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Lou Over the Wall. Big Fish and Begonia. Night is Short. Walk on Girl. Those are kind of anime movies that are going to widen out. Early Man was something already released. Yep. So, and Mirai, sorry. I think this is a top contender right now.
It's beautiful. It's just beautiful to look at. It really is. And knowing that what the painstaking setup for these actual sets must have been, as opposed to just all being drawn or computer animated, I think right. it deserves some credit.
Now, when we did our mid-year Oscar race update, there were major critics hailing the production design of this movie as being something that should be nominated.
How could you not? I mean, those are the two I would land on most for this one. Is animated feature, I think it'll be nominated. I don't think it'll win. I'm with you. I think I have a couple already higher than it. Mm-hmm. Production design, it could make some noise because, you know, we've been talking for like 20 some odd minutes, almost a half hour already. And how many times have we talked about just the set, what goes into those, the making the motion, the yeah. stop motion going into it, and the details, the little details from the tears going down to the dog being washed clean. Like, there's so many little things
it's
that
just
are
just the color scheme. Yeah. Pinks and light blues.
It's like shoving
weird.
A rainbow right in your face. Right. It's yeah. just fascinating. So production design, I would advocate for at this point. Along the line, I'm still high on Hereditary for production design as well. I'm still kind of high on A Quiet Place. True. So it's going to be a good year as far as all the minor quote-unquote categories go.
All the period movies coming out. I think still, it's going to be hard
yeah,
to...
you're right.
All right, so let's double back a little bit. Do go over the performances, Mike. I thought these voice talents, they do a marvelous job. A lot of their jokes are contingent on timing, just in a Wes Anderson movie to begin with.
When
and
was the
tone
last time
of your voice
Ed Norton led a movie? I'm serious. Like, I loved him in Fight Club and all
but
that stuff.
But he makes you laugh just, about saying, oh, let's take a vote.
Right.
Stuff like that.
Right.
Goofy things
I
to
missed
say.
Him is what I'm saying. Right. Like, I miss his
well,
talent.
Well, if you miss him, watch the roast.
The roast.
Yeah,
he was
Bruce
hilarious.
Willis.
He was very funny at the roast of Bruce Willis.
And he does a monologue for like 25 minutes.
And somebody else comes up afterwards is like, you're the only person that can go to a roast and talk about himself for 20 minutes. A lot of talent in this cast. We said that. Bryan Cranston and Ed Norton are kind of the leads.
The voices fit the character so well.
Yes.
Like Bryan Cranston, could he be anybody else?
He's awesome.
Could any other dog in this movie? No, of course not.
Liev Schreiber, too. I thought he did a phenomenal job.
Yes, he made me laugh a lot. Scarlett Johansson's voice, the texture of her voice. My God.
It's not fair because she was in Her. She already had
no
all the practice.
She has the most unique voice.
I totally agree.
Oh, Jesus, that's an industry right in itself. Like, she should be in every animated movie. What are we doing?
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't have a lot to add about the
performances.
It's tough to do with voice acting.
But the animated characters give very good performances because of the level of animation we have, the level of detail.
I'm kind of angry this isn't so, I mean, top 10 still, but it's so low. I expected this to be higher, especially with due to inflation and all that stuff.
Yeah.
As far as stop motion movies go, because I think it deserves eyes on it.
I just think it was made for kind of a niche audience.
Yeah, you're probably right.
That's my theory at this point. But the script, I guess the transition there, non-spoiler version of it, this is not fantastic Mr. Fox in terms of
it's a little
narrative.
All over the place.
Yeah, it is kooky.
Yeah.
It is something that has major plot holes and just yada, yada, yada
stuff. I mean,
stuff.
It sets you up. It doesn't want to be taken seriously right from the jump.
Oh, by the way, we have a magic serum.
Right.
Oh, by the way, we have, he can do this. This dog has this little weird superpower that we explain once. Oh, by the way, we have this this guy who's really important to the plot that will just show in cutaways throughout the movie.
An actual island of garbage.
Yeah. And then I will talk about it in spoilers, but the hero of the movie makes his climactic decision at the halfway point.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's.
And then it's just, there's no big move from him later on. Another character, the B story, actually gets the climax.
Exactly, which is a really odd decision.
Very strange. Now, maybe as a writer, I'm not sophisticated enough to get that, but it's just, it's going against the grain.
It hit awkwardly, I'll say.
Okay.
It
so
hit awkward.
I'm not the only one.
No, I felt the same.
I love the first half of this movie in terms of, like, the jokes really work, especially the first few watches there. I think
it's funnier than I thought it would be.
Right.
Definitely funnier than I thought it would be.
I think the creativity, just I can gush over that forever in terms of the art and aesthetic values of it. I'm in on this movie. I think it's very good. It's just not great. And that's kind of where I land.
Probably where I'm at too. And the 82 Metascore is the 89 Certified Fresh. I think I'm okay with those scores if it's taken with the idea that this is a beautifully designed movie.
Right.
But if it's the script and the story and all that, I would think it's lower.
Yeah, you should watch this to take in
right.
the aesthetic.
Exactly.
You should watch this to take in the production design.
So those it's watches from us with that caveat, I would say.
Right.
Right. So
if you like Wes Anderson jokes to
exactly.
a feast
it's a
for the eyes.
Yeah.
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 And you like dogs. It's funny.
Yeah. If you're a cat person, we don't want to talk to you anyway. Let's I'm kidding. Let's go let's dance. Let's do some spoilers. Spoilers ahead.
This is a spoiler warning.
Spoilers. 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 Spoilers.
Mike, and Oscar Sprint, spoilers!
So this is the spoiler section for Isle of Dogs, finally, after all these months passed. If you want to hear, if you don't want to hear the spoiler section, you want to hear just about the non-spoiler stuff, the production values, the performance reviews, go back and listen to the first half hour or so. From here on out, it is all spoilers all the times about the twists and turns of Isle of Dogs, so if you have not seen the movie, stop here. Or if you want to know what happens with the movie, if you have seen it, you want to hear our thoughts, it's all spoilers from here on out. So let's start with some carryovers.
Essentially, Mayor Kobayashi becomes the character that makes the climactic decisions at the end of this movie. He is someone who has to basically make his nephew and his previous decree about the Isle of Dogs to banish all the dogs. He basically has to nullify that decree because the backstory that we get in the very first shots of the movie on the murals of the Japanese dojo flash through in his head. And all the activist heroes, from the kid who's just trying to get his dog to the Greta Gerwig character who's there protesting, basically win over this previously evil politician willing to commit murder, etc., etc.
Yeah, on a drop of a hat, too. Like, it happens immediately.
It's a bit of a deus ex machina, and it's just like, yeah, so he does this little highlight video in his head.
Right. And then it kind of even goes further off the rails because, okay, the big decision is made. It turns out this Watanabe scientist who had the cure all along and was put into exile by the mayor, Kobayashi, ends up hacking the system anyway and making the button that does get pushed that's supposed to kill all the dogs backfire.
Yeah, it's very goofy. It's
and
not...
then you get this storyline of Kobayashi giving Atari a kidney, and he passes, so Atari becomes mayor.
Paying penance.
Yeah, and that's like the whole end of the movie, the whole last 20 minutes.
How can a kid be a mayor?
It's like,
they just did all this.
Convoluted and bizarre.
They really went, you know, the extra mile to go through the Japanese political discourse there.
Right.
And then the end of that, the kid's allowed to be mayor?
Yeah.
That's kind of silly.
It hit me wrong, too. So
either make a doggy kids movie or give me a cogent political scheme.
Well, I did appreciate the script does have some highlights. I did appreciate the obvious analogy or comparison to what's going on in the world today with as far as refugees and immigrants coming in.
Right. Yeah, that metaphor is relatively thin, but it makes sense saying nice things about it.
Exactly. It's not deep. You're not changing the world with your message,
true.
But you're highlighting.
But basically, the goods delivered in this movie are beat to beat, sight to sight, or sound, if you like that. But it's essentially, if you like Wes Anderson dialogue, you'll like this movie.
Exactly.
And you'll get a lot of snarky, happy,
funny,
witty jokes out of it. I would
say, actually, if you appreciate Moonrise Kingdom, this is probably very close to that. Because you have a lot of Ed Norton wittiness one-liner. And...
But the heart of a Moonrise Kingdom or a Grand Budapest Hotel, or even the Fantastic Mr. Fox, about what it says about family, and the emotional payoffs of those movies are much more put together in terms of narrative.
Yeah, this kind of cheats in that it's hoping that you're a dog person going in.
hoping your dog
right. It doesn't establish
hoping
the bond.
You want
it's
to see
more
pretty
like,
pictures.
Exactly.
Hoping you want to laugh at Wes Anderson humor.
So we're not going to go deep into the plot beat by beat. Essentially, Atari is on the search for his dog Spot because all dogs have been exiled to the Isle of Trash or the Trash Island
yes.
because there's dog flu as opposed to bird flu. I thought that was kind of clever just to get a reason to get the dogs out there.
Right.
He's looking for his dog Spot. Atari is the nephew or once removed nephew from this Mare Kobayashi who has this big sinister plot to exile all the dogs and get rid of them because he wants to replace them with these robotic dogs that he's created.
It's funny because his family, the Kobayashi family, has been the cat people the whole
right.
millennia.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of little Easter
little
eggs like that.
Like
that.
That and fun. So, basically, Atari goes on the lookout, is helped to find Spot through Chief and other dogs, again, the Cranston dog, Ed Norton, etc., that help him find Spot eventually, and they have a big tussle with the Kobayashi robotic dogs.
They go dark because it's the harrowing stuff. You got rumors, Jeff Goldblum being the rumor monger somehow.
Great. He was great.
You know, one dog committed a suicide. He was a suicide. He committed...
well, you heard about Puppy Chow, right?
hanged himself with his own
Puppy
leash.
Chow's out of business.
Oh, my God. Effed up stuff. So, again, not a kid's movie, right? So,
no. And you're dealing with a new father in Spot that has to come back.
Raising the stakes. So that's why maybe the third act is a little disappointing to me because they raise the stakes into this is some harrowing stuff. Yeah. This is an adventure with some danger.
It is.
You know? I mean, I loved all that early stuff just with the dogs, right? Before the little pilot gets there. And then, of course, when the little pilot does get there,
I was surprised the little pilot got there so early, as a matter of fact. I mean, I thought it was going to be later on.
And they kind of go back and they go, yada, 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 here's his backstory. Right. And it's goofy and it's a little funny, but it's mostly goofy. So I'm kind of a very mixed review, even
it
though
is.
I think the highs of this movie are so goddamn high with the visuals
it
that
is,
I'm going to wind up being pro.
I think it is a mixed review overall. I think that's kind of the movie that we're dealing with. Basically, Atari does come back. The dogs do come back. They're able to stop Kobayashi from pressing the big button. The big turn happens where Kobayashi gets appealed to by Atari after his haiku poem, which everybody loves in front of the television station and all that. And it's basically... they hit the button anyway because Major Domo, who's Kobayashi's right-hand man,
right, the real villain,
wants to go through with killing all the dogs.
Now, I think the climax of the story, or for the main character, for the chief character, happens in the middle when he agrees to be Atari's dog.
You can see it that way, sure. I could see that.
It's a turning point, but what's the other big thing that a character does?
Yeah.
On the boat to Japan, he changes.
Yeah.
That's his final change. Yeah, he has some charming conversations with Scarlett Johansson's dog character, but
it's cute.
He jumps into the tussle. No, he doesn't. He doesn't even do that. That's the Leif Schreiber character.
There's a lot of... I think it relies a lot on dogs being lovable creatures.
And yeah, and these scenes are lovable scenes. So there's a lot of scenes that are just fun in this movie. So we said we're getting into spoilers, but I didn't write down all this stuff down after five watches.
I strung you along.
Except I would say that the pug that understands TV, the fact that... The
Oracle, I thought, killed me, played by Tilda Swinton.
Brandy,
and she's the one
that's owl.
Able to relay to the dogs, essentially, that Kobayashi's plan is to kill all the dogs once he gets reelected.
Right.
And she's able to come up with this, whoa, she can read the future? No. She just understands TV. I thought that was so funny.
The Greta Gerwig, her character is fun. Another voice talent.
Yeah,
my God.
Totally.
Harvey Keitel, by the way. Harvey Keitel, Scarlett Johansson, mm-hmm. Ed Norton, and of course, Brian. Like those, they should be in every animated
great casting.
Movie.
You're
what
absolutely
are we
right.
doing?
Great casting.
They should have podcasts.
Harvey Keitel is hilarious in this as well. And he even has to... I don't know how much money they had to pay him to actually do the dog howl a couple times that he does when he actually goes, oh! Like the wolf from Pulp Fiction behind a microphone doing an owl. I thought that was funny.
I love his voice so much. Now, last thing to kind of end with here. There has been some criticism that there's a white savior at the end of it with kind of Greta Gerwig's character with the white dog, you know... I disagree with that because the Japanese characters decide the fate of the script. Kobayashi's transformation from villain to hero changes the arc of the script. Literally, his decision to unstamp the...
It did strike me as curious at the time, though. Like, what is the need for the heroine to be an American exchange student? Why couldn't that have been another Japanese character?
Well, I think here's the disconnect. Like, Kobayashi makes the climactic decision of the movie, and yet we have, for the rest of the time, we have a movie with an A story about Chief and a B story about Greta Gerwig.
Right.
Kobayashi's making the climactic decision. The kid, who is the hacker, who we never really meet, who's just shown in little cutaways, who saves the day at the 11th hour after Major Domo presses the button,
right,
saves all the dogs from death.
Right.
And yet we know nothing about this character. So literally, you have two Japanese characters saving the movie, literally, and yet we don't have them characterize more than a few cutaways and a few scenes with Kobayashi.
It's a really good point.
Maybe that's why we're having such a disconnect.
It's a really good point. I wish I had more to say about this movie, but I was kind of let down.
I was a little let down, too, after Fantastic Mr. Fox. And I think there's legitimate structural problems with the script. But in terms of eye candy, like we said,
yes, totally. That's my best scene is how this movie looks. I thought the Oracle, the comedy really shines in this. It's a lot, like I said, a lot funnier than I thought it would be. When Spot is in the ambulance after being in the scrum and all his babies are cuddled up next to him.
Adorable.
Oh, my God. I wanted nothing
Where
more.
Does the kid get the bottle?
I just wanted to hug everyone.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I agree. It's adorable.
And, again, the comedy at the end where Atari is like, anyone who is against these dogs should face the harshest penalty, the death penalty.
Yeah.
And the consulate's like, that's a little excessive. He's like, okay.
Well, if you made a kid mayor, you're going to get
30 days community service.
Right.
little jokes like that.
A lot of little jokes and a lot of rewards for watching this movie. But overall arc of the script, not necessarily put together.
So that would be your worst scene, quote unquote?
Overall arc of the script. Yeah.
It does. It's just disappointing. I'm sorry. I wanted more. I thought the potential was there for more, and maybe I'm a bad person for thinking.
But all the big critics saying it's going to get nominated. Yeah. I had originally given this a grade of a B+88. It's kind of dropped down for me.
Yeah.
Even in talking about it and watching it last night, I kind of think it's more like a B86.
Yeah, I'm even lower than that. I'm an 83, BB-. It was enjoyable.
Well, that's the 3-point Mike and Mike curve.
Exactly. the other bell. It's enjoyable. It's definitely something to see, and it's definitely not something that you're going to see every year. It takes certainly time and effort to put something like this on the screen.
But it's weird because we prophesied way back that if they were going to make a stop motion movie, don't you think they would go in with a great script?
Right.
They knowingly go in with a great script. Yeah. And when we said if they're going to take 3 years to move one frame at a time and move the arm of a stop motion arts and crafts project one frame at a time, move every piece of that, they would go in with a great story.
But it was Wes Anderson's vision. This is what he wanted. This is what he decided on. So maybe earlier, this could be something that we don't get.
Here's a deep cut. I feel like the same narrative problem here is the problem that Mudbound had last year.
Expand on
making that. The climax, giving it to the wrong characters.
Oh, I see.
Definitely a cultural or racial confusion in allocating certain agency to characters in both of these plots.
That's a really good point.
Because he is a white man making a movie about Japanese saviors to the movie, and yet he's not comfortable enough to make
giving them a spotlight
ingrain them throughout the movie.
To really substantiate them as a character. It took me 18 minutes to get that word out, but substantiate is what I was looking for. That's it. Let us know what you thought about Isle of Dogs. Do you think it's a shoe-in Oscar contender? We seem to both think it'll be there for Best Feature as a nomination, but we'll see as time passes. Maybe Production Design, too. I would push for that, actually, over Animated Feature, but we will
see as it
comes out. Let us know your thoughts on Isle of Dogs. Let us know if we should have just had my idea and just kept pushing this down the road and never gotten to it as a little meta joke.
Are you let down by the fact that we didn't do a meta joke?
We can reach out to us, Mike and Oscar on Facebook, Mike and Oscar on Instagram, MM and Oscar on the Twitter machine, Mike and Oscar, Instagram, good lord, .com, gmail.com, Reddit, all those fine sites.
We're everywhere.
And we're everywhere. You type in Mike and Oscar. Michael, any final words of wisdom?
I want to listen to the soundtrack again.
The plot fan. Sooner or later, you're going to turn your back on me.
And you downloaded that Keys song.
Eighth grade, I did. You're gonna turn on me, aren't you?
I think the original score category is fascinating so far. We have five.
I would
that
agree.
We've been talking about.
If you ever say that the Shape of Water score was better than Dunkirk's, we might be done with this podcast.
However, it's more listenable than Dunkirk's because you'll have a panic attack if you try to listen to Dunkirk doing everything. You crash your car immediately if you listen to it while driving.
Yes. Good words of wisdom. I agree. That's good to end on, guys. Reality sucks. Keep watching movies with us. We will check you out next time.
See ya. I want